Welcome to the Human Beat. I'm Roger Rocca. The United States is facing a national blood crisis brought on by complications from the pandemic. A significant portion of hospital blood needs for patients is not being met. Doctors are forced to make difficult decisions about who receives blood transfusions and who has to wait until more becomes available. The American Red Cross is the nation's biggest blood bank. We talked with Dale Kuntz, the chief executive officer for the Cascades region, about the shortage, its effects, and what can be done.
Yes, the Red Cross is responsible for about 40% of the nation's blood supply. We're the single largest blood bank in the country. When I really say the country, you know, so that's here in Oregon, it could be in Washington, and really, you know, we distribute blood up to Alaska, down in Florida, to Maine, really the whole country. We supply 40% of the nation's blood. But the crisis, and we're using that word very carefully right now, it's the number and the statistic that really stands out to me is that one quarter of the people that need blood were not getting the blood that they needed. That we as the blood bank industry, right, if we think about the Red Cross, we think about the other folks who do blood banking, together, we're not able to help the people who need the blood at that moment. And it could be blood, right? If you think about traditional, like whole blood, right? You have a pint of blood. Maybe you would need a bunch of blood if you were to go have surgery for a trauma event. You know, car accident victims often need 100 units of blood, 100 pints of blood. That's 100 people who have to step up to make a difference for that one person on that day. So it's not one unit per person per day. It's other things like cancer, right? We're all under this global pandemic where everything's been sort of mixed or changed or how we're operating, but other things keep going ahead, right? Car accidents are still happening. Cancer is still happening. Cancer patients need a very specialized blood product that only has a shelf life of 5 days. And so making sure that they get the right kind of blood product that they need right when they need it. And so this crisis is really that, like, we just don't have enough donors right now because of the pandemic and because of staffing issues and other things that we're all kind of facing in our daily work life to really have the blood on the shelf to be able to give it to the hospital so that they can make a difference when they need to be able to do that.
Are people who become ill from the pandemic, is that part of this? Is the blood supply needed in part for them? Or is this that the pandemic is sort of preventing the collection of blood and for all those other things that normally are happening?
Yeah, I think that's a really great question, right? So I'm not a doctor. Some folks who may have COVID, who may be hospitalized, may need blood in some way. I don't know that. But I do know that, like, less people are showing up to give blood. We've seen a 10% decrease in the number of people who are coming to give blood. And 10% doesn't sound like a lot, right? But for a business that was, or industry that was really just meeting the need, just barely meeting the need, because we don't want to waste anybody's time and effort when they come to donate blood. That 10% reduction is huge. That's a huge, huge difference. And just in Oregon, that's, you know, we normally collect, say, 700, 800 units of blood every day across the various blood drives that we have. So that's 80 less units every day. That's 80 people who aren't potentially getting that life-saving product that they need. And that makes a huge difference when you add all that up.
So what's the solution to that? Where can we go from here?
Yeah, so traditionally the Red Cross, you know, we've had a lot of, we do blood drives at community centers and at high schools and at large employers, right? Those are kind of some of our, where we will go and we'll do a blood drive at the local high school. And, you know, 100 high school students will go and learn what it's like to give blood for the first time, right? And knowing that they can make a difference. And yeah, they get out of school for an hour, right? They can come hang out in the gym and give blood, and that's great. But they also get, you know, I remember as a high schooler giving blood, it's a really good feeling knowing that you can make a difference. And with COVID, you know, a lot of those high school blood drives, a lot of those college blood drives, and a lot of those workplaces aren't happening because schools are being rightfully safe in a lot of ways and not allowing outsiders to come into their spaces. Workplaces aren't back open in the way that we used to do. Right. You know, I'm doing this interview from home right now. It's just a testament to sort of what this is all like. And so where we go from here is that we make that, you know, my daughter is five. So I'm right in the smack of the Frozen years, watching the Frozen movies. And there's this one song in there that's the next right thing. And it doesn't, like, a lot can be going wrong and a lot can be not perfect. But if you do the next right thing, and for a lot of people, that's contributing a time. Do you have a little bit of time that you can go and contribute blood? You sign up for a blood drive, you know, and make a difference today. And then can you do that again in 56 days when you're eligible to give blood again? And again in 56 days when you're eligible to give blood again? That's what makes that huge difference into people's lives.
Well, I want to get into how you find a place to give blood. But first of all, let's deal with the giving of blood itself. I'm guessing that of all the people in the United States, that probably the number of people who give blood is not the majority, that fewer than 50% of the people in the country are giving blood. And part of that is because, you know, we all know that to get the blood out, they have to stick a needle in your arm. Well, tell us about that process. Is it really something people need to be squeamish about, or what is it like?
Yeah, so first I'll start with, you're pretty close. About 30% of the country is eligible to get blood. So once you pull out the kids and, you know, other issues, about 30% of the country is eligible to get blood. That's eligible. About 3% of people who are eligible actually give blood. Mm. So there's a big difference there in the people who can make a difference, but not haven't yet sort of gotten over maybe that squeamish factor.
Well, get us over that. Get us over that.
So, you know, I've been giving blood since I was in high school, you know, to get out of class for an hour, maybe to go hang out with somebody for an hour, right? Way back in high school. And I gave blood all the way through college. And now I give blood every 56 days. It is a chance and opportunity for me to talk to one of my friends, especially during the pandemic. Hey, come give blood with me. At least we can chat next to each other for an hour, right? And we can be with each other. It's really easy to go. You have a little conversation about sort of where you've traveled to and different health things that might be going on with you. And then if we determine that you're still eligible to give blood, we'll maybe prick your finger to see how much the iron is in your blood to make sure you can safely give blood. And then after that, our phlebotomists are really good at getting that needle exactly where it needs to go. And then it's, for most people, the whole process takes about an hour. But when you're actually giving blood, you know, for most people, it's 5 to 10 minutes of sitting there, you know, rolling something around in your hand and having somebody come, a really nice Red Crosser, come and talk to you for a little bit. And then after the end, all of that, my favorite thing is you get to go drink orange juice and have some, for me, Oreos. I love Oreos. So you get like refill. It's your excuse to really eat that food that you maybe been putting off. And even for folks, I know that maybe you're worried about your iron content when you go to give blood. That what I always tell people is have chocolate and strawberries the week before. Right. That sounds like a delicious dessert. Iron will be up. You'll be ready to go give blood safely.
And the truth is, actually, you may feel it a little bit when the needle first goes in. But actually, once it's in, your body kind of tunes out. You're not that much aware of it for the rest of that 10 minutes or 20 minutes or whatever it is that it's in there.
Yeah,
I think it's more a psychological thing. We don't
make you look at your blood if you don't want to. How about that?
Well, I have to laugh because there is at the local hospital here, there is one of the people who draws blood for blood tests and so on, and revealed that she actually used to faint when she used to have that done to her. But it doesn't bother her at all to do it to someone else. So, So if somebody decides they do want to give blood, it would be great if we get that number above 3%. How do you go about finding out where and how you do that?
Yeah, so the easiest, the two easiest ways. The easiest way is to go onto a website, redcrossblood.org, and you can just type in your zip code there and find blood drives that are going to be near you. in the next few weeks. The other great way to do it is, you know, everybody has an app. We have an app, and it's this, the Red Cross Blood Donor app. My favorite thing about the app is that when you sign up for an appointment, and go through that process in the app, we will sort of tell you your full journey of your blood, right? Your blood is now in testing. Your blood has now been shipped to a hospital. Your blood is now, you know, made it to a hospital and made it into a patient, maybe in Portland in OHSU, or maybe your blood is a certain kind of blood where a patient maybe needed it in Kentucky, or in my blood recently went to Texas the last time I gave blood, and I'm a certain kind of blood type. I'm O negative, so I'm the universal donor, right? And I have a little thing in my blood that that allows my blood to go to NICU babies. And so I know that like when I go and give blood, my blood is most likely helping out babies in the NICU. And as the father of a child of a NICU baby, that will always stay with me, that like I can help out those other families in that moment. So those are two great ways to sign up to give blood.
Well, that's really important. And that's something I certainly didn't know. And I suspect most people don't, that you actually have a track of what happens with your blood after you get it. So it's not really, it's anonymous, but it's not really anonymous because you get to find out what good it did.
You get to find out where it went, right? So yeah. I know that generally my blood goes to NICU babies, but I can't say it went to a certain NICU baby, but I know that it went to go make a difference.
Yeah. And,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So that 3% that gives, I think in a way talking to those people right now is kind of important too, because they've already gotten over all the hurdles. They've done it before. And some of them aren't right now for various reasons. So you're really needed if you're in that 3%, you know, to kind of show the way for everyone else at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. And it, you know, it makes a difference. Every time a single individual goes to give blood, they can contribute to three different people's lives because of the way that blood is changed and kind of made into a hospital grade product, right? The way that we do that. And so you could, one person get, you know, can go make a difference in three people's lives. It's a huge deal to be able to do that. The one thing I would say that with this most recent appeal that we've had, what we call, you know, when we do a lot of this media attention, the need for blood, we've seen a huge, tremendous outpouring of support by Oregonians who are at the core generous. And so it will be a little bit hard to find a blood drive right now if you wanted to go give blood this week, because our blood drives are generally full for the next week or two, right? Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that the need for blood goes away in 2 weeks because you can't find an appointment. The need for blood is constant. You know, that everybody there, somebody in the United States needs blood every 2 seconds,
right?
In 90%+, I can't remember the exact percentage of people will need blood at some point in their life. Right? So these things are not going away.
And they're full not because you're getting all the blood you need, but they're full because all the avenues for having blood drives aren't there right now, and all the staffing for having all those blood drives aren't there. So there are fewer blood drives, and that's why they're full.
Exactly. That's correct. So that's where if they're full for the next, if, you know, if you go on to redcrossblood.org and you can't find an appointment, you know, move it out a couple of weeks to maybe when there is a spot and that will make it a little bit easier for you to find that certain time and date that you want, but also make it a little bit easier for us to sort of help and stretch out the most number of people we're able to help.
So we are in a pandemic right now, and I think, you know, one of the reasons why fewer people may be donating is it safe? Is it safe to donate right now? What can you say about that?
Yeah, I think it's safe right now, and it has been safe throughout the pandemic to come and give blood. You know, our phlebotomist, the really nice people who are going to take care of you, are wearing masks. You know, we are following all the state guidelines around vaccination protocols and all of that for our staff. And we're making sure that everything is clean, and we're spacing out our beds a little bit further apart, you know, following social distancing thing, terms we didn't know a couple of years ago, right, have been in practice for us since March of 2020, that we've had in place since the very beginning of this pandemic, because we knew we had to continue to operate to help meet the need, even during the pandemic.
Are there other things about the shortage of blood and the blood drives and so on that we ought to talk about that I haven't asked you so far?
The thing I always tell people is it's fun. Like, there's a certain amount of feeling, and maybe it's the fact that you're a pint lighter, I don't know, but like that when you leave from giving blood, or that day when you have that bandage on your arm, I always feel a certain amount of pride and a certain amount of humanity. And those things are, you know, I think we're all searching for that little bit a lot. And it's really, it connects you with those people, with the person around you and the person who's coming in as you're leaving, or vice versa. And it connects you with your community, and it connects you with your, with who you are and who we are as humanity. And it feels good. And that's the thing that I would just leave you with, is it feels good to make a difference.
I guess you're one of the few people I've met who, when you hear the phrase, "What do you want, blood?" you can say, yes, actually.
Yes. So we've heard every vampire joke you can imagine. And we happily embrace that, but it's, you know, it's vampirism for good. And that's okay. And that's, you know, the Red Cross mission is to prevent and alleviate human suffering.
Right. Well, before we leave this particular subject, would you give again those, the website and so on, for people to find out how and where to do this?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you want to give blood, the best way to do that is redcrossblood.org. And then you can also sign up for the app, which is the Red Cross Blood Donor app.
That's great. Well, you are the chief exec for the Cascades region of the American Red Cross. So what else are you involved in besides blood, besides getting blood?
Yeah. So, you know, I often will ask, especially school groups, when we go to present at school groups, what do you know about the Red Cross? Or, you know, or right, maybe at a Rotary conversation, people will be like, well, I get called about blood, right? Yes, that's important. And yes, it's a big, big thing of what we do, but we're also congressionally chartered to help active duty service members and veterans. You know, we've been doing that since our founding, by our founder, Clara Barton, and way back, you know, in 1911. So we've been doing it for a long, long time. We help people in the immediate face of disasters. And so disasters can be big, giant disasters, like the most recent Tonga earthquake, or they can be disasters like the 2020 wildfires, right? Which really fundamentally changed how Oregonians see disaster. Or they could be the small disasters, you know, that a neighbor down the street accidentally, maybe they had a short in their house and their house burned down. And so the Red Cross responds to those disasters as well. And that happens 2 to 3 times a day here in Oregon, where Red Crossers will show up in, often in the middle of the night, and make sure that those folks have a place to stay, that we can help them, you know, get in touch to replace eyeglasses if they ran out of the house too fast, or clothes if they need clothes for the night, or making sure that they have food, you know, a meal voucher so they can go get a meal. Really making sure that they're cared for in that little bit of time before all the other things happen, right, in those disaster situations. So making sure that people are cared for in that immediate moment for disasters.
I think a lot of us may have a concept of what the Red Cross is that more or less is frozen in time, having to do with the time when we kind of first experienced it, whether we were born at a time when, during wartime, when the Red Cross was so important in helping with the war effort and so on. So I'm glad I asked you the question, because I think you can give us a better understanding of how Red Cross has adapted and what it is doing currently. So specifically to the Cascades region, what kind of work are we doing in the area where we live? What is the Red Cross doing here?
Yeah, so we, you know, my meeting immediately before talking to you today was talking about how we help school kids be more prepared in the region. Mm-hmm. And how do we help, you know, kindergartners to understand what home fire safety means, and what a home evacuation plan means. And we have a program that we teach in schools around that. We have a slightly different program that we teach to older elementary school kids, and My son came home just yesterday from his class, and they had done the program, and he was beaming, as you know, way that we all want our children to just be smiling, just proud that he got to do the program, and just really raving about how he learned about disasters and the little things that, you know, that he learned, that the fact that it stuck out that he was really going on and on about was that it only takes 2 minutes. It's 2 minutes is what you have to get out of your house if it's on fire, mm-hmm. and or oftentimes shorter. And that's not a long time. And he was really, so we timed it. How can you get out of the house in 2 minutes, right? And lo and behold, he can do it much faster than 2 minutes if there's no fire. But we focus on the preparedness of our communities, making sure that we're ready for those disasters. We focus on helping those people during disasters. And then we focus on recovery. So if a disaster has happened, you know, like the Oregon wildfires, we really focus on helping out and supporting other community-based organizations or other nonprofits to help those who need it, maybe a little bit different way than what the Red Cross traditionally does. And then all of that is all tied together in a way that we are volunteer-led. Yes, I'm the CEO, but I will tell you that, you know, I'm at the bottom of the pyramid when it comes to our organization, because that's because volunteers make up 90% of our workforce. They're responsible for nearly 100% of the work that we do. The person who you see wearing a Red Cross shirt or vest out doing the work that we do is more than likely a volunteer. More than likely, it's a neighbor that is contributing their time. Somebody who wanted to go make a difference in their community. And help out somebody else.
So how do you make those choices? There are disasters large and small. What's the process by which the Red Cross says we need to go into this area and provide help?
We're always there. that's, you know, if it's a small disaster, if it's a big disaster, we're always there. Mm-hmm. And we don't pick and choose. The Red Cross has this idea of the fundamental principles. And one of those principles is universality. And what that means is that we're going to help everybody. Impartiality means that we're going to help everybody. Universality, we're going to be very open to everybody who needs it. And so anybody who needs our help, right, in the face of natural disasters, will get our help if they need it. And all they have to do is ask. And a lot of times the person asking on their behalf is maybe just somebody that knows that we can provide that service. Maybe it's the local fire department, mm-hmm. or maybe it's another nonprofit who says, hey, the Red Cross is really good at that. You should give them a call. And that's really where we show up. You know, people can count on us because we always show up.
Well, you bring up another thing that I want to ask you about, and that is given that you are basically volunteer driven, how does somebody, if they want to pitch in and help, how do they become a volunteer?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question, because we're always looking for more people to make a difference. I say that the Red Cross is of, for, and by the community. And that's only possible because of volunteers. The easiest way to do that here in Oregon is just to go to redcross.org and do that. And you can just sign up to become a volunteer. It's a pretty quick process. You get interviewed, so you could say, hey, what are you actually passionate about?
One thing we haven't talked about yet is, you're doing a lot of sophisticated things in order to keep the blood supply safe and so on, and collect platelets and go to all the places you need to go to render aid. All of that takes money. Where does the money come from?
So the American Red Cross is, while we're congressionally chartered, we have very little federal funding, mm-hmm. And that funds a little bit of our work with our active duty folks and their veterans. The majority of the funding for the American Red Cross comes from the generosity of people. You know, our mission, I said earlier, is to prevent and alleviate human suffering, right? Through the power of volunteers and the generosity of donors. And that generosity of donors, you know, that enables us to have the blood bus there on the right day, so that you can give blood at your community center, or to enable us to give that $600 per family that we typically hand out when a home fire happens, or to pay the staff to train the volunteers, right? That's really what enables all of that to happen. But.
Well, speaking of preparedness, those of us who do live on the coast sort of live in a situation where we all know there's another shoe to drop. And that shoe is the Cascadia subduction zone. And we have no idea when that shoe is going to drop. It could be tomorrow. It could be 500 years in the future. And that uncertainty also leads us to kind of put our heads in the sand to a degree and not really prepare for it as we probably should. Because we know when that shoe drops, it's very likely to be a very major thing, both from the earthquake, which will be much more significant than I think most of us imagine, and then from the potential tsunami that will follow that, particularly for the coastal areas. So in terms of the Red Cross, are you guys thinking at all about that, or seeing that as something that you potentially during your term at Red Cross would have to face?
Yeah, I mean, I really hope that I don't have to see that.
do we all.
Right, we can hope. But we are working to be ready for. And I don't know that, you know, the Cascadia is so big. It's and right. so huge. I don't know that we'll ever actually be ready for it or fully prepared for it, right? But kind of going back to sort of what I said earlier about the next right thing, right? What's the small thing you can do, right? What's the, and we have resources on our website that you can go and, you know, over the course of a year or maybe 2 years, slowly build up your kit, right?
Before we go, I do want to ask you again to tell us the contact information for if I want to give blood, if I want to volunteer, and if I want to donate.
So the easiest way to do all of that is just to go to our website, redcross.org, and you can schedule a blood appointment, you can volunteer to make a difference, and you can donate to help us be able to make that difference.
All right, Dale Koons, the Chief Executive Officer for the Cascades region of the American Red Cross. I very much enjoyed talking with you. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
All right, good luck. You've been listening to The Human Beat. I'm Roger Rocca. Thank you.